Some of you all purchased Be the People, and I alluded to that book that I published in 2011. And the reason I wrote the book again, I was concerned about what was taking place in the country, and just so puzzled by the fact that as a nation, as overwhelmingly Christian, that we were seeing the kinds of policy outputs that were coming out of Washington. And as a Christian, and I'm very involved in my church, I'm an intercessory prayer, call myself a prayer warrior. But I've seen so many miracles, so I'm really into prayer. And I was not, you know, raised in a church. I was not a devout believer. I had a late Christian conversion experience in my 40s. And in fact, Vanderbilt hired me from Princeton when I was sort of going through transition. And so they didn't know that when I actually showed up 2 years later that I would come as a born-again Christian. And so I say that they hired one person and a very different one showed up. God has a sense of humor, right? And I look at all the, you know, the things that have taken place, like academia really wasn't the career that I would have chosen for myself. I wanted to, first, before I got to graduate school and I started at community college, my career ambition was to work, to be a store manager. I imagined myself working in the mall, managing a boutique. And when I graduated, I applied for jobs. I wasn't able to get a job right away. And the interviewers kept telling me that I needed a four-year degree. I did what any bright college student would do. I looked through the college catalog and I found the major that had the least amount of math. That was criminal justice. So I became a criminal justice major, but I also made a decision, like any bright undergraduate would do. I made a decision that I was going to be an honor student. And that was influenced by the fact that I knew I needed a job. At this point, I had two children. I was divorced. I knew I needed a job, and I felt like when I was filling out those job applications, I didn't have enough information for the applications, you know, to make myself distinguished above the pack. And so when I made the decision to be an honor student, I purchased and checked out books on how to make A's in college, how to take essay exams, how to take objective tests. And, you know, there's a technique behind all of that. I applied the principles in my first semester at the four-year college at a 3.7 average. And so I graduated magna cum laude, and, you know, I hesitate to tell people this, but I was working a full-time job, 40 hours a week at the community college, but I was working in the library nights and weekends, and no one used the library nights and weekends, so I did all my homework. And when I was ready to graduate, when I was ready to leave, I graduated from my four-year college, and I was trying to make a decision about what I was going to do next, because I knew I did not want a law enforcement career. I decided that I would get a master's degree in political science, and I was going to work for the government. I was going to be a government employee. And so I had to leave my job, and they placed me with two people. They couldn't find anyone else that wanted to work those nights and weekends. But I think about it, and I was not a religiously devout by any means back then, but God was looking after me because, you know, He had this plan for my life. In the 1980s, affirmative action had teamed, people were hiring minorities. I mean, it was the time to be a minority, but I could not get a job. Even though I was an honor student. And so my professors steered me into academia, and they kept doing this guilt stuff of there was this critical shortage of minority professors, and that if you could, you needed to. And I really didn't want to because I was painfully shy. And I had a shyness that was crippling, that if someone asked me my name, I would freeze. And during my early years of teaching, I would try to write out everything I was going to say and read it. And when I was in college, class participation was part of the grade, and I knew I had to say something. So I would write out something, and I would read it, and my voice would be quivering. And so, I went to Princeton. I was very successful there, and it never occurred to me that I wasn't going to be. It was like God put blinders on my, blinders on my face, blinders on my eyes. I could not see failure. I couldn't see a handicap, and I had mentors, and my mentors did not look like me. They were not the same race. They were not the same gender, but they just encouraged me. And so my mentors made me feel like I could do anything, and I went through school not thinking about the fact that I was black, I was female, I came from a poor background, I was oppressed. And I didn't learn I was oppressed and that I couldn't do all those things until I was in graduate school. and by then it was too late. And so part of when I look at minorities and I look at the problems in our society, if I had people telling me what we tell our young people today, I don't know that I would have even tried. And so I was protected. Like when I went to my four-year college, I had a conservative professor that had me reading Thomas Sowell, Glenn Lowry, Milton Friedman, Edward Banfield. These were conservative writers that I probably would never have been exposed to, but I was reading their works. And this was, back in the 80s, and that professor kept telling me I was a Republican, and no way. I didn't become a Republican officially until 2009, but he was telling me back in the 1980s that I was really a Republican. So I don't know, like, even though I was in the Democratic Party, like, when you're black, you're born a Democrat. In most cases, but not in all cases, some people born into black Republican families, but a lot of us are born into Democratic families. That's where you are. And it took a lot for me to switch parties. And so I was a late party switcher. So
any lady that asks her students to read Solomonsky's book is no slouch.
Well, I mean, that was like all of that was more recent that I had them read that book. And the book is one of the dedications is to Lucifer. You can skip over that part, and there's some things that as Christians we're not supposed to do, like the Solomonsky book, Roots for Radicals. It advocates infiltration, deception, and manipulation, and so good Christians can't do that. But I know there are many pastors in the room I may get in trouble here, but throughout the Bible there were people that used subterfuge when they needed to.
That's true.
And in a war situation, it calls for different tactics. And I think we're in a warlike situation. And so I personally, and I'm a no authority, but I personally see nothing wrong with young people infiltrating organizations, going inside and keeping your mouth shut until you are positioned. And once you're positioned, you do what they did. You hire people like yourself until you get your own critical mass, and then you impose your worldview. I personally see nothing wrong with that, but you have to examine your own conscience to see whether it works for you.
Yeah. Ready for some questions?
I'm ready for questions.
We're going to ask you to one thing that I need to clarify is questions, not lectures.
You spoke of Saul of Lovinsky, who we're all aware of and have heard of. What do you think the connection between Saul of Lovinsky and George Soros is? Are they connected apart, or is there a definite connection between them?
Well, I'm sure that probably if Soros is a man of the world, that he's read Solzhenitsyn and that he's very much familiar with Marxism and communism, And I think the connection is that communist socialist link that everything America represents, he seems to hate. And he, for some reason, like, I don't know why God does things he does. So I don't know why, you know, this man has billions of dollars to use for evil causes, or, you know, why people like that are ran for so long. Just, I don't understand, but the link is that they both hate America and everything it stands for. And Saul Alinsky wanted to take from the haves and give to the have-nots. And, you know, part of the communist manifesto and the planks of Karl Marx was all about redistribution. They wanted to end inheritance, you know, where people work hard, they want to pass things down to their children and grandchildren, the wealth. And, you know, they wanted the central planning, progressive income tax, the state to be able to take away your private property. You think about what America has traditionally stood for as far as freedom, you know, individual rights. Everything that the Marxists and socialists push for has to do with, you know, groups, group identities, and organizing in that way. So there's really not a lot of emphasis on individuals being individuals. And your value to the society, and I see this at universities, depends on your positioning with the group. And so someone like me, being a black conservative traditionalist, you know, not really feminist, then my value at a university, most universities, would be very limited because I bring nothing, you know, to the cause. And that's sort of how university administrators are sort of geared to think.
Hi. I'm a teacher at a high school, and I guess one of my questions is, for kids and maybe even parents, you know, whose kids are getting ready to go to college, you know, with all this talk, I mean, there's definitely a lot of concern, but is there anything that you have to offer for either those students or those parents who have those concerns about, okay, they're going to these universities, is there something positive that, you know, because we get all this stuff on the news and we can get, you know, doom and gloom, and so is there something that you have advice-wise or just thoughts of, you know, hey, here's some good things?
If I can say that, you know, that I'm sorry to be the person that Cassandra that's bringing the doom and gloom. There was a time in my life when I was Pollyanna, but I'm Cassandra now. And I think there is something that parents can do. But, I mean, like if you're homeschooling your child, to a certain extent, they are a little bit insulated. But that homeschooling needs to include preparing your child for the arguments of the secular left. I mean, they need to talk about, you know, LGBT stuff, everything that you see taking place in the wider culture. I mean, you can't shield them from you can try to shield them from pedophiles, but you can't shield them from everything. You can't follow them 24/7 to know what they're looking at on the smartphones. And so one of the things that I would like to see developed and used is a curriculum for kids that are in church and Sunday school, that it's not just teaching them about Jesus and the gospel, but you also need to teach them apologetics that includes some of what the world is saying, so that when they hear it for the first time, they're not just caught off guard. Because they've been insulated, they've been, you know, protected in a tight Christian environment. When they step out into the world, they're just totally unprepared for all those arguments. And I think that Sunday school and most churches need apologetics. And I don't know that there's a good curriculum that's been developed, but they certainly need it. And I think that if we spent as much time on that as some churches spend with mission trips and mission training, that we would be able to save more of our children. And a lot of the children that get stolen away at college and they fall away from the faith, some of them are going to come back. You know, a lot of them may come back. And I strongly believe in prayers and that God is going to protect them while they're out there in the world. But I think that fewer might go, you know, fewer may be lost in college in high school if we did better training in our Sunday schools and even with the homeschooling. And I think a lot of the classical Christian schools, the private schools that are really focused on that, that they may be doing a little of what I think is needed, but I think a lot is needed. And then the other thing I want to say to parents is that you may think that you're going to protect your child by sending them to a Christian school. Think again, because some of those are the worst places. They've been infiltrated by people that may not believe the Bible at all. And your child goes in there, maybe you send them there thinking that they're at a safe place, so that guard is down. When they go to a secular university, they know where they're going. They know that they're on foreign territory. They know that they're going to be challenged if they're Christian. When they go to a Christian school, they think they're safe, and they're not.
I think one of the things that's important is that we teach students, it's a good question, by the way, to be strong enough in high school that they go find that thing in college that will help them survive. By the way, we brought the band in for a little competition because we want you to just be conditioned to the fight that you're going to be involved in.
Hi, my name is Aiden Shepherd, and you commented on microaggressions.
Right.
I would kind of like you to elaborate on that a little bit, because some of that sounds like just me trying to be polite.
In what sense?
And opening the door for a girl.
Oh, I mean, the you can get in trouble in so many ways. The definition of a microaggression is almost like a perceived slight that, I mean, you think about it, if you have a room with, you know, five people, you could say anything that could offend any one of them at any time. And in the past, you know, people were not primed to be looking for offense. But nowadays you have students that their ears are hurt to see if they're being offended, not just students, you know, other people as well, but we're focused on students. And a liberal professor, bless his heart, got into trouble because he asked a minority student where her homework was, and she complained. And so the university spoke to the professor, and he too decided to take early retirement. And so, I mean, some of these liberal professors, they have dedicated themselves for the cause, and they've been out there on every issue, and they've been just so right. If you're white and you're liberal, you're part of the problem.
And it's interesting. One of the things that's coming is Generation Z. You got to do a little Googling on Generation Z.
Hi, I'm Diane from North Idaho, up by the Canadian border. Before I ask my question, I just wanted to say, as a Tennessee born and raised girl with friends who graduated from Vandy, it's near and dear to my heart, and I am commiserating with you about Vandy's early defeat in March Madness. But I was wanting to follow up with something that you had said in your presentation about parents supporting financially this kind of thing when they send their children,
right,
or allow their children to choose those colleges. In my circle of friends, there are a number of young people who have felt God's calling into areas of society and occupations that absolutely require a university degree, a medical school, you know, law, all of those things.
Right.
And I'm wondering, are there private schools? I understand that there is this issue definitely in all the state schools, but are there private schools where you can go and not encounter that sort of thing so much or feel like you're supporting that?
Well, I mean, you know, I wonder why parents support it and they don't push back. But I have encountered several Christian students. In fact, I'm meeting with two on Monday that they felt like God sent them to Vanderbilt. And so, you know, maybe God did send them to Vanderbilt. And I've also encountered some students, you know, that are conservative and they're concerned about their rights. And so, even though I've wondered why parents and students have been so silent and they've tolerated things, I don't think that we should give up on the universities yet. I think that we need to demand our rights and hold them accountable, just like we need to hold politicians accountable. And so you're right, but the discrimination is so great that if someone wants to go to medical school, they had these interviews. Now this goes back to, aren't you a Christian? And you can't engage in deception. I mean, you're not supposed to, but for medical school, you may be asked, can you assist in an abortion? What do you think about abortion? What do you think about LGBT stuff? If you give a biblical answer, you're not gonna probably get in. I don't know, you know, what each person does in that situation. I think that's between them and God, because those questions are questions that shouldn't be asked. They're clearly designed to weed people out.
Two more quick questions.
Maybe one of the pastors can answer what to do in that situation. I want to know what you all think should be done when you know that the institutions are screening, you know, to either hire people or admit students that hold a particular worldview, and they're screening others out. And that may mean for some of you Christian young people that want to apply to colleges that you don't put on your, you don't identify yourself in anything that you write or a resume, or you put all your Christian stuff on it, that maybe sometimes you don't give all your information. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think you have to not only pray a lot, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves.
Uh-huh.
And I think you, it depends on the goal.
Uh-huh.
You have to be true with the Holy Spirit that's on your heart.
Yeah, and I mean, if you really believe that scripture, that the Holy Spirit will give you, you know, what you need at that particular hour, if it is a strong Christian that's going for that interview, they're going to have other people praying for them. You know, their whole church may be praying. I'm having the interview tomorrow. And for those of you all that are doing things like that, you know, don't be so shy or, you know, so, I don't want to say prideful, because we're not prideful people, right? But don't be ashamed to ask other people to pray for you and let them know what you're doing. And even like when you're taking exams and stuff like that, I think it's very important to realize that if there's a call on your life and God is going to use you in significant ways, for Christians, you know, there's an enemy that also knows that there's a call on your life, and so there's a plan to thwart everything that you're doing. And so you need all the help you can get. And I realize that in a forum like this, everyone doesn't believe the same. We all don't have to believe the same. But, you know, I feel called, you know, to talk to people who are Christian that are going into the environment that I'm in or the environment that I will be leaving soon. Because I think that it has gotten more dangerous, it's more treacherous. Yet, you know, you need to be there, and it's strongly encouraging to me when I encounter Christian students. And during the time that I was secular, when I was more agnostic, I found out later, you know, that there was a student that when I first came to Princeton, he said he prayed for me every day to get saved. I met him 5 years later. You know, I met him, it's more than 5 years later, but they've been 15 years. He was about ready to be ordained as a pastor, and he told me that, you know, he was in my freshman class at Princeton, and he prayed every day for me and another professor to get saved, and we both got saved. And as a faculty person, I had a student invite me to church, and I went. And, you know, I didn't get converted right away, but I noticed that there was something about that student that was different, that she had something that I didn't have. She had a piece about her that I didn't have. And there were staff people that invited me to do things. And you know, when you're faculty, most staff people will hold back because you're faculty. There were some that didn't hold back. And even though I didn't necessarily do what they wanted, they did reach out. And so I encourage people that sometimes God puts you in a position where you're the only one that can talk to a particular person. And so if you feel led or prompted to do that, then you need to just go with it.
There's a famous journalist and Fox contributor and writer. Her name is Laura Ingraham. Part of it, if you know her,
yeah.
Or of her. Anyway, recently I received a letter in the mail. Believe me, I get a lot. I don't know why. It could be because we support different organizations. But it's like our name has been sold to I don't know how many people, and it's one of my things that bugs the dickens out of me. But anyway, I like to support where I can. My point is that she wrote this letter in regards to conservative students on many of these campuses. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm talking about, but there's an organization, and for the life of me, I can't remember exactly what it's called.
Young Americans Foundation?
That, I think, sounds
like it. I mean, like, yeah, there are several.
They're being trained how to deal with professors that are blatantly anti-constitutional freedoms, outright Marxism, and so on. Some of them have gotten their iPhones or their smartphones, and they've taken pictures and videos of the teacher doing what they're not supposed to be doing. Many of them have been fired when the news got out. But anyway, I think that sounds like a very fine organization, and they're saying if we could get more of these, things could really start to turn around.
I think they will turn around, and I'll turn around some. And but I mean, you know, it's going to take a while because with the conservative students, they're sort of so far behind. And right after Mr. Trump was elected, it was so much harassment for anyone that was Republican that were suspected of having voted for him. And with conservative students, they're not going to ask for safe spaces. They're not going to go to campus police because someone calls them a name. And so, you know, they are not going to handle it the way liberals handle it. They got crybabies. They're not snowflakes. They don't melt down leaves.
We're going to have to end it here. Tomorrow morning, trust me, the best is yet to come. Bring somebody else. I know you're going to miss that wonderful parade downtown. For all the Republicans who don't want to know anything, hang on. I'm sorry. I'm not very into that kind of stuff. I tell you what I am into. I am into us getting to the point where we can have gracious conversations with people that disagree with us because we've read and thought deeply about these kinds of issues with this kind of lady. So we'll come back tomorrow morning and take your program with you, because on the back of that program is what's coming up next. Thank you for coming. You've been excellent.